I am currently in the studio with Oluwademilade Adebaboyo Egunike, or let's just say Demi.
Yeah.
Demi, I've met you something like 3 weeks ago for the first time, right?
Yes.
And you were coming from, you live in Freiburg, mm-hmm. but you were coming from Ukraine. I mean, you were not coming from Ukraine, you were coming from Munich and then yes. to Freiburg, but you were in Hungary before.
Yes.
And before you were
in Ukraine
because you studied there.
Yes.
And you just left there because of the war in Ukraine.
Yes.
As I met you last time, I just want to know how you were, what was your mood on that day, and what were you expecting to find here?
That particular day, I came to a meeting at Saga. It turns out that Saga wasn't open that day, so I felt a bit disappointed, but I was very glad
that I met you. Let's also remind our listeners that a Saga is a place where refugees or people, foreigners, get some help, like legal help and support yes. here in Germany, in Freiburg.
Yeah. And then I met you, Rufin, and you took my contact and gave me the help I really needed, actually, from Saga that day, because the thing was, I had an accommodation in Freiburg. I was in an hotel, but then I needed to do the registration, and for that I needed a permanent address. So I was looking for accommodation, basically.
But we are far already. This is almost the end of your story. Your story started in Kharkov.
Yes.
Kharkiv in Ukraine, where you were studying engineering, you were at the final year of your studies.
Yes, final semester.
Yes. And you had been living there, it means you had been living there like for 4 years approximately.
4 years, yes.
And suddenly the war begins. Oh, this was not suddenly, this war has started 2014 already and so on. But we know what happens on the 24th of February, and you had to leave the country. Just tell us about this. Where were you as this bombing started?
Oh, the very beginning. It's quite dramatic for me, really, my story, because at 4:55 or so, usually sometimes I'm awake, like if I am doing an all-nighter, but I had slept that day and I woke up to a call from my uncle, and we were discussing when I was going to leave Ukraine, and I was like, oh, I planned to leave Ukraine around the 7th of March, because we had just gotten the permission from our school, from my university, to leave. And I was like, oh, I have to do the clearance first before I leave the country. And I heard a loud bang outside my window. And my heater was on. It's a fan heater. So I thought, like, from the sounds I could hear, I thought it was rain. And then there was lightning outside. And then the call ended. I looked outside my window and I saw smoke. And I was like, okay, it's a building burning. And right then again, another one struck, another missile struck. And I was like, okay, it has started. What we fear has started.
So let me come back. You said you were planning to leave Ukraine.
Yes.
Was it because of this war already?
Because of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did not feel Ukraine was safe.
And where were you planning to go?
I actually have a visa. Mm-hmm. To the UK to visit my auntie. So I was planning to utilize that and then stay in the UK, complete my semester. I really did, to be honest, yes, there was the fear of the war starting, but we never really expected it to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, I'll finish the semester there, or for as long as, you know, when the threats wild down, then I would come back to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. And you heard the bombing next to your window.
Yeah.
You saw the smoking.
How
does it feel?
At that moment, I was like, okay, so it's like the beginning of a movie, a horror film. You know, you're like, what happens now? Like, is this real? Are we dreaming? It's still 4 a.m., so maybe it could still be a dream, you know? But it was real. It was real. Right after that, I opened my door, my flat door, and I saw my neighbors also looking outside their windows. Some people were coming out of their flats to see, and there was just a lot of commotion in the building. Yeah, because the building I stay, the floor, the level I live on, it's mostly foreign students from Ukraine. And then the other floors are Ukrainian students. And outside also, on the other side of the building, you could see lots of Ukrainians and Ukrainian students with their luggage, you know, like already fleeing. Those who had cars hopped on their cars and were driving away, and we were just like, okay, so what's the game plan?
And what did you do then?
The first thing I did after I was like, okay, this is real, I left a voice note on my family group chat saying no one should panic, but the invasion has started, as you know, we had kind of been counting down the days. And yeah, and then right after that, I sat down in my room and texted a friend, went to his flat. He also lives in the same building, but I went to his flat with some other friends, and we were just watching CNN while I was also scanning how to leave Ukraine, because I was meant to have booked a flight. I had messaged the airline just the day before if they would still be flying, because some airlines had already stopped flying from Ukraine, and they said yes. But now to book a flight was impossible. To book a bus even to Kyiv or Lviv was also impossible within the next like 5 days. Yeah, so I was just like, okay, is it safe to go on the streets and then see if I get to the bus station? Maybe I could still get a bus. If I get to the train station, maybe I can still get on the train. But mostly mentally, I was just paralyzed. So I just sat down and watched CNN. And it was, I think they were showing the sirens blaring in Kyiv, and also showing the Russian convoy advancing towards Ukraine, and well, it was damning.
Ooh, this is really hard. I mean, you went through a lot, but what did you then do? How did you leave the place to Hungary?
To Hungary. I left Kharkov by train at the Centra Vaxa, the train station in Kharkov. And what pushed me to do that was after, you know, scanning CNN all through the day, receiving calls from family. And, well, we had a meeting, like those who were still left in the building, we had a meeting on how we're going to start pulling together food resources. And then because the shelling continued all day, we headed to a shelter very close on campus, actually. And the first night in that shelter was very cold. And I was determined to not go back there. Because I was like, this is only safe for how long, you know? You don't know what happens next, what you did not, or I know even though the international media was like, oh, the war is going to start, really from within Ukraine, as many reports have said, life was normal just the day before. So it's like, you didn't expect it, now it's happening. So I was planning on how to leave Ukraine. Most of the information I got on leaving Ukraine, interestingly, was from Twitter. People who had made the journey right then, that day, that afternoon. While in my part of the city, the public transportation stopped right from that morning. And even trying to order a taxi, it wasn't working. So all through the night, my friends and I were on basically every taxi service all through looking for a taxi. It was like, if you get a taxi, we would all use that taxi. Like, you know, like maybe like 20 of us. So the taxi would drive to the Vaxar, come back, pick the next batch, drive to the Vaxar again, and come back. And just, you know, until we were all at the train station. So that was the plan.
Mm-hmm. So you passed through the train station. And, yes. You know, you talked about Twitter. We got a lot of information via Twitter, and especially from students, African students trying to flee from Ukraine, and who also took buses where they were not allowed to go in, or maybe they faced discrimination and racism. Did you also face such?
At Kharkov, I initially did not notice the discrimination because, like I said, we had mobilized. There were a lot of Africans at the train station. I would say that particular day, the train station was filled mostly with foreign students, not just Africans, and very little Ukrainians. But even then, like thinking back, like after my experience in Lviv, at the train station in Lviv, I could then see what could have been discrimination in Kharkov, because we did not know what platform the train was going to arrive, because it wasn't the normal train schedule. And the police and people at the information desk refused to tell us where the train is going to arrive. No. But what I noticed was that the Ukrainians that were there were not on the same platform as us. So I was like, obviously, they should know where the train is coming. Mm. So I went to that side of the platform. While the information we got from Twitter was like, oh, it's coming on platform 4 at maybe 4 p.m. or something like that. But everyone else was on like platform 2, the Ukrainians. Mm. And the police was there on platform 2. Yeah. And the first train that came at around, I think, 2 p.m. and it was heading to Kyiv. And, well, most people didn't want to get on the train because it was heading to Kyiv. But a lot of people did still eventually get on that train. And it
did
was...
You?
I did not get on that train. I used the train as a lesson because that was basically a stampede kind of to enter into the train. So I knew that to get on a train, I had to be at the right position, the right track, probably directly where the door would stop if I were to increase my chances of getting on the train. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you mean this was even very difficult to get at least into a train?
Yes, it was very difficult. Lots of people who wanted to get on the train. So, and the trains were overcrowded, really. Cabins that would probably take 4 people were now harboring about 16. So the trains were overcrowded. Some people who eventually got on the train ended up standing for the whole of the 22-hour journey to Lviv.
So you left Kharkiv to Lviv? To Kyiv?
To Kyiv and then to Lviv.
From Kyiv to Lviv?
Yes.
And then from Lviv to...
And then from Lviv, we got down at the Lviv Vaxar. There we met some volunteers who, Ukrainian volunteers who gave us food and drinks. They were distributing food and drinks. And then we were waiting for the train. Either at that point, to be honest, we just knew we wanted to go out of Ukraine. We didn't know where. On Twitter, we had gathered that Poland wasn't letting people in. So we were planning to avoid Poland at all costs. But Hungary, Slovakia, Romania, we viewed as open, and we were heading towards there. And luckily, there was a journalist that spoke to us and told us when to expect a train, which was the next day, around, I think, 2 a.m. in Lviv. And there also, you notice the same, well, this time it wasn't really tricks. It was just basically, oh, this platform, only women and children are going to wait here, mostly Ukrainian women and children, because when you're like, oh, but this is a woman and child from India or from Nigeria, even a pregnant woman, they're like, wait.
Okay. You went there to the borders now. What happened at the borders?
No, at that point, I was still at the train station. Mm-hmm. Eventually, around 2 a.m., a train did come heading to Chop. It's a border town. It's a border town in Ukraine. We got on that train because apparently most other people didn't want to get on it. After there had been a long queue of women and children, and, you know, some people had already fought to enter. But by the time we got on it, it was like half empty. And the train basically still did kind of leave half empty. Mm-hmm. And we got to Chop. Now at Chop, the border town, there was another very long queue to get a ticket to go straight, I think, into Hungary, or was it Slovakia? And we were not so sure if we would be able to get on that one. Mm-hmm. So, but we thought we were close enough to the border to order a taxi. So we ordered a taxi for, I think, 1,000 hryvnias each per person. And four of us got the taxi to the border that drove us to the Ukrainian border with Hungary.
Okay. Did you have any bad experience at the border? Because people did not only talk about the experience, the discrimination and racism in the train, but also at the borders.
At the border, there was a normal queue. There was a normal queue, at least on the Ukrainian side of the border. Mm-hmm. There was a normal queue. Everyone, those who were driving cars had a queue, and those who were pedestrians had a queue. And it was a normal queue. Mm-hmm. But when we then walked the Hungarian side, there were quite a number of people already there, both with cars and pedestrians. It's a completely different line for pedestrians crossing the border. And then it was also meant to be a normal queue at the beginning, but then gradually we saw some women and children and families walk to the front of the queue, which was, in my mind, acceptable, because it was like, oh, yeah, the women, the children are tired and it's cold. It's basically freezing. So, yes, they should go. But then also it's like there should be a ratio, because there are thousands of women and children. And then if you say, okay, all women and children first, then you could be there at the border, as some of my friends experienced, for like 2 days and not being able to cross.
How long were you there at the border?
Luckily, I was at the border for 5 hours. Mm-hmm. I was helping the women and children, and I guess eventually the border guards on the Hungarian side were like, okay, yeah, you too. Mm-hmm. Can come in. Yeah.
So having this kind of humanitarian help activism in you helps a lot.
I guess so.
Yeah. And you managed to cross the border, went to Hungary.
Yes.
How long did you stay there?
I was in Hungary for 2 weeks. There was a funny incident that happened at the Hungarian border. I think it's the Lonya border, Hungary. After we had all crossed the borders, the Ukrainians, Pakistanis, Indians, Nigerians, Cameroonians, everyone, then they had stamped all the Nigerian passports also. They had stamped every passport. But then they collected the Nigerian passports back and said there is some irregularity that a passport starting with A, that is, the passport numbers are alphanumeric, a passport starting with A, as most Nigerian passports do, are not legally allowed in Hungary, which puzzled me because it's how do you say a passport is not recognized in a country. And we kind of all came to the conclusion that it was a ploy. Because then what they did was they got a bus, put all the Nigerians that had just crossed the border on it. And, well, basically the instruction was this train is going to drive you to the train station, get on the train, get to the train. I've forgotten the name of the small town. I think it's probably still Lonya. And then you head to Debrecen. From Debrecen, you get on a train to Budapest. And then from Budapest, head straight to the airport.
Aha, okay.
Mm-hmm. To head back to Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was interesting because no other national got that treatment.
And did you ask why? Like, only Nigeria?
They had given the excuse of the passport number.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't go into this train or you didn't go in this bus.
I got on the bus. We all got on the bus. Mm-hmm. But when they dropped us at the train station, we also got on the train to Debrecen. But when we got to Debrecen, my friends and I booked an hotel in Debrecen. Mm-hmm. Wow. Most other people got on the train to Budapest. Mm-hmm. On getting to Budapest, a lot of them, I think they headed to the airport, but there was no flight. Mm-hmm. And by then, the Nigerian embassy had not yet organized the repatriation flight back to Nigeria in Hungary. So my friends and I were in Debrecen for about 4 days. Then we got on a train to Budapest, where, because at that point we were looking for accommodation, we had gradually started running out of cash. So we got accommodation from a church in Hungary, an African church, and well, they were really nice people, really nice people. They gave us lots of information on how we could continue our studies because they knew most of us were students coming from Ukraine. But I had to leave Hungary because of my studies also, aerospace engineering. I felt like Germany was a better place to come and complete that.
So you decided to leave Hungary.
Yes.
And booked the flight to Munich, or how did it go?
Getting to the train station in Budapest to buy a train ticket to Germany. to Munich. I haven't been 2 weeks in Hungary already. It was an interesting phenomenon because then again, I felt like a refugee, you know, because there was another very long queue of people heading towards Germany. And but we were able to get the tickets. Some people wanted to bring back the principle of women and children first, where there was no imminent danger. But eventually the Hungarian officials were able to bring some other, and we eventually got a ticket to Germany. It was, I think, what's it called? I think it's a Help Ukraine ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a standing position on the train through Salzburg to Munich, Hauptbahnhof.
Mm-hmm. Standing position means that how long did you, the whole trip, the whole journey take?
The whole journey was, I think, 6 or 7 hours.
7 hours. And yes. You were just standing the whole time?
Well, sometimes there were empty seats and I would sit, mm-hmm. Yeah. But really, I was meant to be standing.
So, and then you got to Munich, and from Munich you came to Freiburg.
At Munich, I met a lady called Jenny, and she gave me the information on where to get registered for temporary protection in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there the next day, and from there, we were driven to a camp, a refugee camp in Ingolstadt.
Mm-hmm.
With other Ukrainian families and other foreign students from Ukraine. We were there for about 4 days. Then we got on another bus. We were placed on another bus to Bad Reichenhall,
mm-hmm.
where we were in an hotel for, I think, about 2 weeks, and we were not getting any response on what was our fate. Could we stay in Germany? Could we not stay? Are we being registered for temporary protection? Mm-hmm. No one was giving us any information. Oh, and something I skipped in the story was, while I was in Budapest, I met a lady, Anna Nunez, who lives here in Freiburg, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
She had driven to the border to help people fleeing from Ukraine. So we met, she gave me lots of information about Germany, how also to find accommodation in Germany from Unterkunft Ukraine, but I don't know, I did not get a response from them. So then I decided, since it seems I am not making progress in Munich, I would come to Freiburg. And that would basically lead to how we met.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you came to Freiburg. You were first in a hotel.
Yes, Malta, booked and by Anna.
Exactly. So she booked the hotel for you.
Yes. I went back to Bad Reichenhall.
Mm-hmm.
To see if the registration was making any progress.
Mm-hmm.
And it still felt like nothing was happening, so I came to Freiburg.
Mm-hmm. And then in Freiburg, this is now the
yes.
beginning of our meeting.
Yes.
The beginning of the story.
Yes.
Yeah. So all in all, how long have you been traveling? So you left Kharkiv, went to Kyiv, then Kyiv, Lviv, and then Hungary.
Lviv to Chop. To Hungary.
Hungary.
Within Hungary, I was in Lonia, then Debrecen.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got to Budapest, got on the train to Munich, was driven backwards, like in terms of direction, to mm-hmm. Bad Reichenhall. then found my way to Freiburg.
Mm-hmm. So means, how long can you say approximately?
I have been on the move. Basically, I would say from the third day of the invasion of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. 27th.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you got here 3 weeks ago.
Yes. I mean, about 3 weeks ago. Yes.
About 3 weeks ago, it's like more than 1 month.
Yes.
You were on the move.
Yes.
What did you take with you? I mean, this is mostly, I mean, you heard bombings, you saw, like, what did you take?
Interesting. Interestingly, when people see me and they see my luggage, even like when I started the journey in Ukraine, it was like, you had time to pack. Because I had a backpack and then a box. Not really a big box, it's still a hand luggage, but it's a box. Most people just had a backpack or just the box. And that's because I had packed since January. In not really in anticipation. I was hoping nothing happens. I was planning to travel to Lviv, still within Ukraine also, hoping that, okay, what comes to us, I don't think anything would happen to Lviv.
And you were also planning to go to Ukraine.
Okay? Yes, to the UK. Yes. So I had packed that box and I was like, this one box, I am going to pick it up in case of anything. Mm-hmm. And then I had another bag where I was like, if I have time to pack, I would pack something.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, yeah, but I still, a lot of things are still in Ukraine, but it's not as important.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. That's great, because I talked to some people who don't even, who were not at their place.
Oh, yeah. As it started, I had a friend like that.
So they don't even have their passport, for example.
Yeah.
You are now in Freiburg.
Yes.
You are active here. What is the next plan? What do you want to do now?
I am not yet done with my registration in Freiburg, but I believe I've made progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I should, when I am done with the registration, I plan to get settled. And getting settled for me is finishing my degree. We are still having online classes.
Oh.
Yes, at the National Aerospace University, Kharkov. So kudos to the lecturers who have continued lectures. Some days it's, you know, you are baffled as to how they get the will to continue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like today a lecturer was messaging us on the group on how we had to postpone class because he does not have electricity. Some other days they are traveling to a safer location. So, yeah, it shows the strong will of Ukrainians.
How does this all feel? I mean, you've never witnessed or you've never been stuck into a war.
No.
Then you are far, like, I don't know, 1,000 miles far away from home.
Yeah.
And then a war starts in this exact place. And then you go, you travel like more than 40 days to leave this place. And then you go to a totally new country again where you don't have any family and where you do your language, your courses from online because they teach. And so.
Yeah, I would just say the whole story is a testament to the human race. You know, it revives your faith in the human race. Lots of kind people, because most times we didn't even know where we were going, or even if we knew where we were going, we did not know how to get there. But, you know, we just kept on meeting the right people. Lots of loving and caring people who had driven to the border to help, who were at this train station to give information, even the government, you know, providing accommodation. It's just a testament to the human race.
That's funny, right?
Yeah.
Testament to the human race. At the same time, it's also humans who yes. are driving this all.
Yes.
It's also human that make this situation, this so bad situation that you have to flee. So at the end of the day, humans are really controversial.
Okay. There are two sides to every story, basically.
Mm-hmm. Temi, thank you for coming here today.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have like a last word to say, like a message to send?
My message, first of all, is a thank you to everyone who has offered help in very little ways, you know, accommodation, food, transportation. That's also even the government of Germany and lots of European nations, and the individuals also within the nation who are volunteering to help people fleeing the war. It's been overwhelming, really. Sometimes, you know, I sit down and I'm like, is this really possible, you know, like making it all the way from Kharkov to now Freiburg. It's lots of people, lots of stories. Some people had it worse, some people had it better, but I'm just glad. I'm just glad and thankful.
Thank you, Demi.
Thank you.